Thank you. Please sit down. Thank you. Please be seated. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much and welcome. Today I'm here to offer my proposed budget for fiscal year 18. But before I do that, I'd like to say a special thank you to the Bureau of Finance and Management for their hard work in a difficult year. Please help me thank them. They're up here and I think a couple back there. Would you stand, BFM employees, and let us thank them. Today I'm going to review the state's economy, I'll look at current year revenues and expenses, and offer my proposals for next year. As you know, revenue collections have been running below projections, but happily, expenses have also been lower as well. Although ongoing expense savings do not bridge the gap created by weak revenues, one-time revenues, and one-time expense savings can provide that bridge. By next year, we should have gained enough revenue growth to cover ongoing expenses for fiscal year 2018, so we have structural balance. But let's begin with a look back. Over the past 5 years, we've posted a budget surplus at the end of each year. Let's take a look at that. As you can see, the surpluses have been rooted in both revenue better than projected and expenditures less than appropriated. The red parts of each bar depict spending at less than appropriated levels. These have been fairly stable in the $7 to $13 million range. Most reversions have been in our entitlement areas, predominantly in Medicaid. However, last year we saw reversions in almost all agencies. The blue parts of each bar depict revenue received above expectations. Over these past years, we've worked together to adopt conservative revenue estimates with a high probability of attainment. Fiscal year 2016 ended with revenue slightly above levels adopted last March. With these surpluses, we've improved our rainy day fund balances and invested in one-time opportunities. Let's see how these surpluses have affected our rainy day funds. Since I've been governor, we've added over $117 million to our rainy day funds, from which we've also spent about $67 million for disasters and debt reduction. This chart shows the balance of our rainy day funds as a percentage of budget. Since the early part in the graph, 2009 through 2011, you can see we've maintained reserves at or above a 10% target of our general fund appropriations. Nationally, the median state rainy day fund is about 5%, with half the states above that and half the states below 5%. Today, in South Dakota, we have $157.4 million in our rainy day funds, or about 9.8% of our target goal. We have to remember that last year we increased our budget substantially to increase teacher pay, and as a consequence, the percentage of revenues or of the rainy day funds as a portion of that, a larger budget, has fallen slightly to 9.8%. My recommendation for fiscal year 2017 is to replenish rainy day funds to a 10% level using $2.4 million. And I'll describe how I propose to do that, but before further budget recommendations, let's take a look at economic trends. The South Dakota Council of Economic Advisors regularly meets to consider a wide range of economic data, forecasts, and assumptions that are used in predicting future tax revenue. Reviewing this information with experts from across the state helps us to provide the best economic and revenue forecasts for the budget each year. Let's take a look at some of the key economic assumptions and forecasts that are used. First, at the national level, like other governments, we start with national economic indicators. IHS Economics' most recent forecast is for 2.2 gross domestic product growth for 2017 and 2018. Our South Dakota Bureau of Finance and Management reviewed this forecast with the South Dakota Council of Economic Advisors, and it was judged to be consistent with their views for the U.S. economy, but needed slight moderation specific to the South Dakota economy. The moderated forecast is closer to recent South Dakota trends for employment and income growth. This moderated forecast was used to develop the revenue projection I'm presenting to you today. We expect positive economic growth, but at slow, stable rates, similar to what has been experienced the past few years. Inflation is another important variable, as inflation has a direct impact on the growth of our sales tax. Higher inflation creates stronger growth in sales tax revenue, but lower inflation, as we've experienced the past few years, leads to slower growth in sales tax. Inflation is anticipated to be in the 1.5% to 2.5% range over the next 2 years, more normal than the extremely low inflation we have recently experienced. We're assuming no major economic disruptions from abroad, and in South Dakota we expect steady housing and construction activity over the forecast period. Finally, as most of us are aware, we anticipate farm income to be at lower levels compared to record highs we experienced a few years ago. Agriculture is a major cornerstone of our state's economy. Continued low commodity prices, combined with sticky input costs, have put pressure on farm income, as you know. We anticipate this will continue in 2017 and 2018, and this leads to less spending in the ag sector and, consequently, lower sales tax collections. This next group of graphs shows IHS Economics' most recent forecast for the U.S. economy. These are national predictions using four key indicators. The gray bars show calendar year actual figures, and blue bars show the forecast for those years. The first chart, top left, shows U.S. real gross domestic product in trillions of dollars. Real GDP is considered the most comprehensive measure of the U.S. economy. Real GDP was flat during the recession years, and since then, it has grown about 2.1%, slower than the 3% growth rates seen before the recession. IHS Economics forecasts more than $17 trillion of real GDP in 2017 and 2018 at growth rates of 2.2% each calendar year. The top right chart shows U.S. employment. The U.S. economy lost about 8.7 million jobs during the recession, and it was nearly 7 years after the recession began that those jobs were recovered. The job growth forecast for 2017 and 2018 is 1.2% and 0.9% growth in U.S. employment. The bottom left chart shows millions of U.S. housing starts. As many of you may recall, the sharp drop in housing was one of the causes of the Great Recession. Housing starts are anticipated to continue to recover at a steady rate throughout 2018. The bottom right chart shows the U.S. inflation rate. After nearly zero inflation in 2015, 2016 is forecast to end at roughly 1.3% inflation. Inflation in 2017 and 18 is predicted at 2.5%. Next, we'll consider four South Dakota-specific economic indicators: employment, non-farm income, housing starts, and unemployment. These South Dakota economic forecasts were used to develop revenue forecasts for fiscal years 2017 and 2018. Remember, these forecasts were moderated slightly from what IHS Economics suggested after we consulted with the Council of Economic Advisors here in South Dakota. First, top left, South Dakota employment. During the recession, South Dakota did realize job losses, but only at about half the rate of the U.S. economy. We recovered those jobs more quickly than the nation and continue to grow our employment. In the most recent several months of 2017, our monthly employment number was, 2016, our monthly employment number was growing at 2% or more year over year. We anticipate continued non-farm employment growth in both 2017 and 2018, albeit at a slower rate of growth. Next chart, top right, South Dakota non-farm income. South Dakota non-farm income is forecast to grow 4.2% and 4.7% in 2017 and 2018. These are near historical rates. Bottom left is South Dakota housing starts. They have grown strongly thus far in 2016, as you can see on the graph, but are expected to moderate to lower levels in 2017 and 2018, closer to 4,000 starts per year, which is more typical. Last chart, bottom right, is South Dakota unemployment. After levels After levels of 5% or worse during 2009 and 2010, our unemployment rate has recently declined to lowest in the nation. We project it to be around 3% over the next 2 years. Bottom line, the moderated forecasts project continued steady but slow growth in South Dakota's economy. We should continue to be conservative in our economic and revenue forecasts as we have done in the past. Now, sales and use tax make up over 60% of our general fund revenue. It is by far our most important revenue source. It can be volatile, though, month to month, and it's important to track sales tax as we make budget decisions. Let's look at some trends we've been seeing in the sales tax. This chart has monthly data back to the start of calendar year 2000. We show in this chart 202 months of data through October of 2016, just a month ago. The shaded areas represent economic recessions in those two areas. This chart shows growth of taxable sales by month, comparing a given month to the same month 1 year earlier. As you can see, even during the slow, steady growth we've experienced since the recession, we've had months when taxable sales were lower than the same month 1 year earlier. You can see that in almost every year. In some years, the blue line dips below zero. That might mean that month, as compared to the prior year, same month, was lower in terms of sales tax collections. For example, in August 2016, we had taxable sales that were more than 7% lower than August of 2015. Growth rates for taxable sales, though, can be very volatile when you look at it just month to month. Adding a 12-month moving average makes a recent downward trend a little easier to see, which is represented by the red line. Notice the highlighted portion on the right side of the chart. Since mid-2015, we've been seeing a noticeable slowdown in the growth of our taxable sales. Remember that the red line is still above zero. It still shows growth, albeit slower and slower growth. This gives you a perspective of the longer-term trends in sales tax. Now I'd like to review more recent sales tax collection data. This chart shows the monthly growth numbers in bar chart form. The leftmost three-fourths, left of the line, shows FY 2016 sales collection growth by month. The first two bars, July and August 15, show sales tax had strong growth in July 2015 and 2016 when compared to the prior year, July and August. That's when tourism was very strong. The Sturgis Rally was celebrating its 75th anniversary. September and October were weaker. Then November and December were on target. Then weak collections January through May. June of 2016 was pretty strong, and we believe this is influenced by those who saw the sales tax increase coming and bought early, which shows up in June collections. To the right of the black vertical line, we see the first 4 months of the year we're in right now, fiscal year 2017. As you can see, we saw not growth, but shrinkage in July and August sales. Remember, two charts ago, we've seen a month or two below zero almost every year. So a few months below zero does not a trend create. Again, though, we think this is partly influenced by a more normal tourism year and a more normal Sturgis rally, and, of course, loss of sales, which had been made in 2016 to beat the sales tax increase. Now we've added the green dashed line. This represents the growth we needed to meet the adopted sales tax estimate when you adjourned in March. In FY 2016, the revised sales tax estimate needed 3.6% growth for the full fiscal year to meet the sales tax estimate. Adding the year-to-date growth rate represented by the red line shows we finished the fiscal year 2016 with just 2.9% growth, or just a shade less than was needed to meet the revised 2016 sales tax estimate. Now remember, this is just sales tax. It's not total revenue. Our total revenue did meet our target, a little bit better than target. But in terms of sales tax, we did not meet our target. Even though we missed the sales tax mark, we beat estimates in other taxes and ended with total tax revenue slightly above total tax estimates. Still, because we finished the last fiscal year lower in sales tax collection, it pushes up the growth rate needed in FY 2017 to meet the adopted FY 2017 estimate, because we're starting at a lower level. Looking at the far right side of the chart, you can see the 4.5% growth rate needed to meet the adopted FY 2017 sales tax estimate. And through these 4 months, we've seen year-to-date shrinkage in sales of 2.5%. Sales down 2.5% so far this fiscal year for those 4 months. We see weakness in the ag sector as one factor in this shrinkage, so let's take a look at that. This chart compares net farm income to sales tax on farm machinery. The blue bars use the blue scale on the left to show South Dakota net farm income. Look at 2002 and 2006. See the low income during those drought years. Look at 2008 and later. Income is strong with high crop prices and big harvests. 2012 was a drought year, but crop insurance locked in spring prices, which were still high. In 2014 and 15, farm income dropped and is expected still lower in 2016. That's the story of the bars. What does this mean to our budget? Well, the red line and the scale on the right estimates farm machinery sales tax collections. As you know, in South Dakota, many purchases in the ag sector are exempt from sales tax, but sales and use tax does apply to farm machinery. So if you look at 2007 and later, you can see tax incentives and strong farm income fueled strong machinery purchases. Sales tax here grew from $17.4 million in fiscal year 08 to nearly $45 million in fiscal year 14. This boosted our tax revenue during those years. Now we see fewer farm machinery purchases, which means less sales tax. And since the peak in FY 2014, sales on machinery has dropped more than 50%. Lower net farm income means less machinery sales tax income. And this suggests growth in total sales tax will be below average until farm income and equipment purchases level out. What are some of the factors that are playing into the recent sales tax weakness? Well, as we just saw, ag equipment spending has been weak. That's one factor. Low inflation we have experienced recently is providing little price increases, which generate, in turn, tax increases. As I mentioned, we had a slower this year in tourism compared to a record year in 2015. In general, consumers are expressing overall caution in spending due to uncertainty, whether it be political uncertainty preceding the election or uncertainty about the future of the economy. Finally, online purchasing continues to erode sales tax collections. Online spending in the United States has grown by more than 12% each year for the past 7 years. Understand, many online retailers do collect and remit sales tax on purchases by South Dakotans. However, many do not. Under current federal law, an online retailer is not required to collect and remit sales tax to South Dakota unless they have a physical presence in South Dakota. Thus, the burden to pay the tax falls upon the individual purchaser, and in most cases, those sales do not get reported nor any tax paid. Let's look at some examples to be sure we all understand this rule. All online sales are taxable. However, not all companies are required to collect and remit the taxes. Three scenarios illustrate who is required to remit taxes and who is not. Let's look at the first one. In scenario number one, a consumer goes shopping at a Best Buy store in South Dakota. As a result, two things happen. Excuse me. First, the consumer purchases their product. Second, Best Buy collects and remits the sales tax of that purchase to South Dakota. In scenario number two, a consumer shops from South Dakota but online and makes a purchase at BestBuy.com. As a result, two things happen. First, the consumer purchases their product. Second, Best Buy collects and remits the sales tax of that online purchase to South Dakota. It doesn't matter that the online purchaser connected to a website in Minnesota. It doesn't matter that the warehouse that shipped that product is in Minnesota. The important factor is Best Buy has a physical presence in South Dakota. So whether the person walked into the store and bought it or bought it from Best Buy online, Best Buy collects the tax and remits it to South Dakota. In scenario number three, a consumer shops from South Dakota online and purchases from a company which does not have a physical presence in South Dakota. As a result, two things happen. First, the customer purchases their product. Second, this company with no physical location in South Dakota does not collect or remit sales tax to South Dakota. The lost sales tax revenue state and local government in examples like scenario number three is estimated at roughly $50 million. That's to state and local governments. Consumers should pay use tax if they did not pay sales tax, but few do. We receive roughly $4 million from remote sellers who voluntarily collect the sales tax. This means most is not being received. As you know, we've been actively addressing this for several years, but most recently in the 2016 session, the legislature passed and I signed Senate Bill 106. This legislation requires remote sellers with no physical presence in South Dakota to collect and remit sales tax in online purchases. It directly confronts the Quill Supreme Court decision. This legislation initiated litigation and is now working itself through the court system. Together, we're addressing this critical issue on many fronts. With all that background in economic conditions and our sales tax, let's take a look at the full revenue picture, including the revisions for the current year, fiscal year 17, and estimates for budget year 2018. This chart details the revised forecast for this year, FY 2017, for the ongoing receipts. The left-hand column of numbers shows the adopted figures you and I agreed upon last March, totaling $1,598.1 million. The next column shows the revisions as of today. Sales and use tax at the top there is revised lower by $32 million, and we discussed at length the reasons for that. Lottery has been revised higher by $1 million. This includes instant online and video lottery receipts to the general fund. Video lottery is currently running 3.4% higher than a year ago. Contractors' excise tax has been revised higher by $2 million. Stronger collections so far in FY 2017 are due to a healthy construction industry. You saw that in the bar charts of construction housing starts. Insurance company tax up $3 million as collections finished 2016 ahead, and we anticipate continued growth in FY 17. Unclaimed property revenues are revised $1 million lower due to higher claim payments realized so far this fiscal year, and the remaining revisions roughly offset each other. Total ongoing receipts is $1,572 million, which is $26 million lower than the adopted forecast, all driven by weaker sales and use tax. Now let's look at FY 2018 projected revenue, which adds another column of numbers to those we've been looking at. This chart adds that recommended FY 2018 ongoing receipts for each category. The far right column shows the change in millions as compared to the FY 2017 adopted estimate. Look at sales and use tax, starting on the left. $6.7 million was the adopted FY 2017 estimate. $974.7 million is the revised estimate today. Next, in 2018, I'm recommending a forecast of $1,013.1 million for FY 18. The increase of $6.4 million shown on the far right column is compared to the FY 17 adopted figure. In other words, we think revenue will be lower, but it'll reach the adopted estimate and then exceed it by $6 million by the end of FY 18. This number represents the new sales tax we will have to budget expenses against for FY 2018 in the sales tax area. Looking at each of the revenue sources on the right, we see some growth in larger sources, lottery, contractors' excise tax, insurance company tax, and the two that are slightly lower, unclaimed property and tobacco taxes. In total, for FY 2018, I propose a revenue forecast of $1,617.8 million. And this is $19.7 million higher than the adopted FY 17 forecast, meaning for FY 2018, we'll have $19.7 million in new ongoing revenue for the 2018 budget. Now let's consider proposed expenses against that $19.7 million. The CPI Consumer Price Index W, which is used as a benchmark for education spending, was 0.3% for the year ended June 30 of 2016. However, my proposal is to increase K-12 education and technical institutes by 1%. My proposal also includes a 1% increase for all providers. In addition to this, last year I proposed and you adopted a 3-year plan to improve the rates of Medicaid providers who are below 90% of costs. This budget completes year 2 of this plan. For state employees, I am proposing a market adjustment of 1%, and I'm proposing to put pay for performance on hold until next year. These increases are affordable only because we are seeing reduced expenses in some areas. The federal medical assistance percentage, FMAP, increased by 1.13%, reducing the state's share of Medicaid expenses. We've also closed the Star Academy and successfully transitioned all juveniles to private placement. The sale-leaseback program has been completed. And finally, utility usage and prices are projected to be lower. Let's look at the dollars. We've looked at percentages. Look at dollars involved in these four areas. For education, total increases of $6.4 million. That includes the 1% increase for state aid and a 1% increase for the technical institutes. Medical and provider assistance, $9.3 million. This includes increases of $18.8 million, offset by 9.5 decreases in FMAP savings, for a net increase that you see here, $9.3 million. This again provides a 1% inflationary increase to providers and year 2 of the 3-year plan to bring all providers up to at least 90% of their costs. Under state employee compensation, a 1% market adjustment, as well as addressing some pay range minimums, which I'll speak about in a minute, no pay for performance. The remainder of state government, a decrease of $2.3 million. This offsets increases related to correctional health care and establishing a mental health court against larger decreases related to the sale-leaseback program, netting a decrease of what you see here, $2.3 million. So the total of 19.7 of expenditure increases matches the new ongoing revenue we just saw in a prior slide. Now, before more detail on these four major categories, I want to talk now about Initiated Measure 22. I recommend no funding for Initiated Measure 22 in fiscal year 2018. As written, IM-22 appropriates $9 per voter from general funds every year starting in fiscal year 2018. 9 times 544,000 registered voters means nearly $5 million every year. With only $19.7 million in new revenue, this would cannibalize nearly 25% of it. Already minimal 1% increases just proposed for education, Medicaid providers, and state employees would need to be reduced to only 0.6%. I believe it's not responsible to use taxpayer money to fund political campaigns at the expense of education, and I am certain the voters of this state do not support that. Ballot measures are, of course, take it or leave it. Voters can't amend them. They can't vote for part of them. IM-22 had 70 sections and 14,000 words. If I was reading it today, it would take me an hour and a half to recite it to you. It's our obligation, at the least, to correct its obvious errors that make it unworkable. Unfortunately, in this case, that's a big job. It's a big job. This is easily the worst drafting I've read in my 20 years in coming to the Capitol. It's vague, overbroad, it used undefined and inconsistent terms. And this sloppiness leads to an endless number of bizarre, unintended consequences. The voters certainly didn't intend to make a registered nurse at McKinnon Hospital a criminal because her husband is in the state legislature. They didn't intend to discourage school administrators who host legislators from offering sandwiches and chicken wings. And they don't want us to cut funding for schools or nursing homes to pay for campaign commercials. As Greg Belfridge of Kello Radio said, I'm not blaming voters. They were hoodwinked by scam artists who grossly misrepresented these proposed measures. You saw the commercials. The backers of initiated Measure 22 knew about many of these problems before they began to circulate petitions. We know because the Legislative Research Council told them in writing that many provisions were likely unconstitutional, but the financial backers of IM22 are out-of-state advocacy groups. 98% of the funding that supported IM22 came from out-of-state. Over $1 million from Massachusetts. The drafters ignored the constitutional questions and moved ahead with this deeply flawed piece of legislation. They're not South Dakotans, they don't live here, and they don't have to deal with the consequences of their actions. Instead, they promoted this measure with a deceptive campaign. Their ads, and you saw them, portrayed the hand of a well-dressed official handing a handful of cash as if the cash is being handed to an elected official. In all my years of public service, I have never heard even a hint of an allegation of any elected official taking a bribe. Never. The proponents of this measure never alleged even one instance that would have been prevented by this act. And as news reporter Bob Mercer wrote, they failed to mention that bribery is already a crime. In fact, we have an entire chapter of our criminal code, Chapter 12A, look it up yourself, an entire chapter that deals exclusively with bribery of public officials. It's already a Class 4 felony. The proponents of this initiated Measure 22 owe an apology to the many honest public servants whose reputations they have besmirched groundlessly. More importantly, they owe an apology to the people of this state. They told voters there was a problem and this act would solve it. But it's their sloppiness and careless disregard for the laws of our state that have created a morass of problems. Voters were asked to pass judgment on a 14,000-word bill based on a 200-word explanation and a deceptive 30-second commercial. As elected officials, we also owe the citizens something. We must respect voters' intent. They expect us to have a campaign finance system that is transparent and honest, and they expect lobbyists to use only their arguments to win our votes. I hope this session we will do the difficult work that the backers of IM22 failed to do. We will not slap together a sloppy 14,000-word bill without regard to the consequences, without explaining the problems that it would cause. Instead, we will study these issues with care and work together to find solutions, soliciting feedback from all perspectives. We will think through the consequences of our actions and ask the most talented legal minds to help draft better legislation. Now, let's return to the proposed FY18 spending proposals, looking at each of the major areas in more detail. First, education. State aid to education, as I mentioned, will total $6.4 million. That's made up of state aid to education of $6.8 million. That includes the 1% inflation in general K-12 education. This increases the targeted average teacher pay to $48,985 for fiscal year 2018. Said another way, it gives schools enough money so that if they maintain the right teacher-to-student ratio, their average teacher pay can be $48,985. Board of Regents, M&R, $919,000. Several years ago, I proposed and you adopted a plan to bring maintenance and repair budgets to 2% of the replacement value of our state buildings over the course of 4 years. We reached this goal in the 2017 budget, and this funding is to maintain the 2% budget, and this number is particularly related to Board of Regents facilities. South Dakota Opportunity Scholarship, $413,000. This funding proposes allow students to receive a $6,500 award over 4 years. This funding helps keep the scholarship competitive as an incentive for students to take a rigorous high school curriculum and stay in South Dakota for college. Over 4,000 recipients are projected for the coming school year, 4,000 recipients. The Board of Regents Utilities Fund, a decline of $2.6 million as a result of lower fuel prices and utilization. Utility expenditures at the Board of Regents are projected lower. Then there are miscellaneous increases and decreases, which total an increase of $848,000. All those add up to the $6.4 million seen in the prior chart. Now, medical and provider assistance. Growth and utilization is identified as costing us $6.3 million. We project an additional 1,166 persons will enroll in Medicaid. That's 1.1% growth. Mandatory inflation of $5.5 million. These inflationary adjustments are required by the federal government and vary across services such as Medicare and certain federally qualified rural health clinics. Provider inflation at 1%. This supports providers such as nursing homes, community support providers, physicians, and many others. Provider enhancement to 90% or complete year two, that will cost us $709,000. As I stated earlier, last year I proposed and you adopted a plan to increase all providers' rates to get them to at least 90% of their costs over 3 years. During the 2016 session, additional funding was appropriated to provide half of year two. So we did a year and a half last year. And in FY18, I propose we complete year two funding for this plan. State savings due to the FMAP increase. In 2018, the FMAP is increasing 1.13%, so our state share goes down by that amount from 45.89% to 44.76%. This means in FY2018, state general funds for every dollar of Medicaid expense, state general funds will pay $44.76 of it. Then miscellaneous increases and decreases of $1.98 million. This includes other changes throughout the Department of Social Services, Health, and Human Services, such things as rural family residency track and court-ordered mental health treatment. The third major category that I identified earlier is state employee compensation. The first line is the salary of increase of 1% for permanent state employees costs $3.65 million. Then a pay range minimum improvement of $780,000 is to move the pay range up for low-paid frontline people who are doing difficult but important work. A number of these employees are paid between $20,000 and $30,000, and I think we need to continue to get their entry-level pay, at least, up to the level it needs to be. Some examples of these jobs would include mental health aides at the Human Services Center in Yankton, direct support employees at the South Dakota Development Center in Redfield, and family services specialists in the Child Protection Program. Then finally, health insurance. In recent years, we've been fortunate to see minimal growth in our self-insured health plan. This $1.8 million cost is a consequence of working to encourage wellness and early detection of health issues. And for FY2018, I'm recommending an increase in the health insurance rate of $342 per benefited employee. The total increase, as you can see, is about $6.3 million. The fourth number shown on the earlier chart is a net of increases and decreases. Here's the detail on that. First, correctional health care. We're projecting costs are going to be up $2.9 million. This includes addressing the federally required health care needs of our inmate population, as well as contractual and inflationary increases. Drug, DUI, and mental health courts, $475,000. These courts continue to be a successful alternative to incarceration and have helped to reduce recidivism. The funding addresses operational costs through 14 drug and DUI courts in the state and establishes a mental health court in Pennington County. The State Treatment and Rehabilitation Academy, STAR Academy, a cost reduction of $3.8 million. Fewer juveniles are being committed to the Department of Correction. This is a trend we've seen over multiple years, and those commitments now are placed in private care rather than at STAR Academy. And a consequence of that is we were able to close STAR Academy earlier this year, so net costs are projected down in 2018 by $3.8 million. Finally, sale leaseback. Fourth item is sale and use back, leaseback, a decline of $4.3 million. In 1986, we sold most of state-owned buildings in the Capitol Complex and leased them back for state use. This was during Governor Janklow's administration. From the proceeds of the sale, an annuity was purchased whose income stream matched the lease payments. We got income payments in, paid the lease payments out, and one offset the other, being revenue neutral. The interest rate differential at the time provided a one-time lump sum of money to the state that was spent. Essentially, it was an arbitrage transaction. The last lease payment and last annuity payment both occur in FY 2017. So the annuity payment does not appear in our revenue projections, nor should the lease payment appear in our expense projections. Remember, the ending annuity payment reduced the revenue projection shown early, so it's a net zero impact. The miscellaneous decreases or increases and decreases on the fourth line, $2.4 million. Bottom line is a net decrease in FY 2018 of $2.3 million from a variety of sources. So this chart now shows all the increases and decreases from the previous slides. The net increase in expenditures of $19.7 million, which matches the projected FY 2018 revenues. Now that we discussed the proposed FY 18 budget, let's discuss the changes we need to make in the current year to balance. First, we start in the hole, as I showed earlier, because revenue is weak. Then, as I described in the FY 18 budget discussions, we have expenditures right now which are expected to be below 2017 appropriations in several areas. The total amount is $34.7 million. And now let's discuss those items in more detail. Here are the reductions. First, state aid to education, $20 million. This decrease is due to several factors. One, the actual number of student enrollments compared to what was estimated is lower by about 1,400. We're still seeing student growth, but it's much slower than we thought it would be. This combined with higher property tax values, which are partially offset by a shortfall in special education, accounts for $2.3 million in the decrease in state aid expenditure need. Second, as part of the education funding package that was passed during last year's session, you'll recall that $36 million of the tax increase was dedicated to property tax relief. As you know, property taxes are paid on a calendar year basis, and the state budget is on a fiscal year basis. Consequently, only half of the $36 million is needed for property tax relief in state fiscal year 2017, which allows $18 million of it to be reduced on a one-time basis in the current year. We'll need all $36 million of it in FY18, but we only need half of it in FY17, and that provides the $18 million added to the other two, or a total of about $20 million savings in state aid to education. The Department of Social Services is next there, showing utilization. Much of this is related to slower ramp-up of juvenile justice reinvestment costs. The same amount of money is going to be spent in juvenile justice reinvestment, but it is slower in ramping up. So as we get to the end of fiscal year 17, we probably won't have spent as much as we projected to have spent in the 17 fiscal year. And we also have fewer eligibles than budgeted within the Department of Social Services. The third item I mentioned already once, Star Academy. We discussed earlier the reductions in FY18. This amount is what can be reduced in 2017 budget as a result of the closure happening earlier this calendar year. Utility rate adjustments, again, as I mentioned in FY18, we're seeing the same sort of utilization and cost levels decreases. So we are able to cut $3.5 million in general funds due to reduced costs and lower usage in current year utility budgets. The Technical Institute's lower enrollment. Again, enrollment is increasing, but much slower than we had projected. So we'll save about $700,000 as a consequence of that. All told, total reductions are 34.7. Some of them are one-time reductions that will not carry into reduced expenses in 2018. We need to have them in the 2018 budget, but they are available in 17. So that tells two of the numbers that are going to be available to us in 2017. Again, we start in the hole with $26 million in weak revenues underwater. And then the lower expenses I just detailed more than offset that revenue weakness. And there is a third one-time revenue we can create if you agree with my proposal. Under current law, you know we receive a considerable amount of cash from unclaimed property. These dollars are primarily from unclaimed bank accounts. We receive those funds as cash in late October or early November. But when South Dakota receives stock, which is unclaimed property, those stocks must be held under current statute for different amounts of time before we can sell them. Depending on the stock, the state may have to hold the stock for a year or possibly 3 years before they're sold. This situation places risk on the unclaimed property office as they exercise discretion following these statutory periods, deciding when stocks can be sold. I'm proposing legislation that would require unclaimed stocks to be converted to cash before transfer to the state as unclaimed property. This would reduce risk to the administrator, simplify our comprehensive annual financial report, and allow the state to sell the existing unclaimed stock portfolio that has accumulated over several years. This would result in a one-time increase in revenue of $13 million, as you can see. Another offset to our revenue shortfall can be foreseen in reversions we know now will occur this year in the Unified Judicial System, Rural Attorney Recruitment Program, and in criminal justice investment. Those two combined are just over $1 million. So all told, in total, these various sources are able to offset the shortfall in the current year and actually result in $22 million of one-time funds, nearly 23, available in FY 2017. Here's my proposal of where those dollars can be invested. First, replenish reserves to 10%. Last year, I proposed, and you agreed with transferring funding from our reserves in excess of 10% and spending on one-time priorities. My proposal is now to transfer $2.4 million back into reserves to achieve the 10% level. Second, the State Animal Disease Research and Diagnostic Laboratory, $5 million. This funding is to construct an addition to South Dakota's ADRDL, as well as to renovate the existing facility. I'll discuss this in more detail in just a moment. Third item, fire suppression fund. This is to backfill the fire fund for wildland fires that have taken place in the past year. Spearfish Canyon, $2.5 million. As you know, Congress is considering legislation that would transfer lands near Spearfish Canyon to the state for use as a state park. The proposed land swap would trade federal Black Hills Forest land with lands held by the State Commissioner of School and Public Lands. If Congress approves this trade, the state would need to buy this land from the School and Public Lands Trust so we can use it in the trade. And the $2.5 million would be the funding going to School and Public Lands for that purpose. Even though Congress has not yet approved the swap, I'm asking you to approve this funding this year, so if Congress does approve the legislation, the state can act. Correctional health care, $1.8 million. This funding addresses the shortfall seen within the correctional health care budget. USD Law School, $1.2 million to be used over the next 3 years. We've seen a nationwide decline in applicants for law school, which is leading to smaller class sizes at the law school, and this will help the law school meet curriculum and library requirements for the next 3 years. Extraordinary litigation fund, $1 million to backfill the fund for litigation expenses not covered by the public entity pool for liability, or the PEOPLE fund as it's known. DOC security and operations, $908,000. This funding allows corrections to upgrade needed security equipment. Rural recruitment assistance, $843,000. This will continue our program many of you are familiar with to attract healthcare professionals to rural areas. The funding will pay for 3 physicians, 1 dentist, 1 physician assistant, 4 nurse practitioners, and many other healthcare professionals, such as pharmacists, physical therapists, and nurses, who have agreed and served time and been employed in rural areas. Veterans Home, $830,000, is to address Medicaid-eligible beds at our state veterans home. There's a corresponding increase in general fund revenue, and this is a net savings to the state. And there are miscellaneous remaining one-time expenses of $2.9 million. This number includes appropriations for the Joining Forces Initiative within the Department of Military, Hope Court incentives within Unified Judicial System, and $400,000 to make changes to the statewide victim notification system, SAVIN, which we must undertake to comply with Marcy's law. Now, I mentioned earlier the $5 million I'm proposing spending on the Animal Disease Research and Diagnostic Laboratory. Let's look at that in a little more detail. The State Animal Disease Research and Diagnostic Laboratory is South Dakota's animal health laboratory, located on the SDSU campus. Its purpose is to provide critical research and diagnostic support to protect our citizens and livestock industry from disease outbreaks. With recent animal disease epidemics like PED virus in swine and the avian influenza in poultry, this lab has demonstrated the value of quickly and effectively diagnosing and responding to these outbreaks. The current laboratory was built in 1967 and upgraded in 1993. It is out of date and needs to be modernized to correct aging infrastructure, accommodate new technologies, and meet current and future standards. During the 2016 session, the legislature approved funding for a comprehensive design study, and this study provided more confidence in the total cost estimate. The initial upgrade and expansion estimate by the architect was a total project cost of $68.8 million. However, after additional planning and several months of reviewing potential costs and seeking efficiencies, we were able to reduce the remaining total project cost to $58.7 million. SDSU is able to contribute $6 million toward this project. My proposal includes $5 million in state one-time funds, plus $1.5 million in offsets on the operations side, leaving $46.2 million left to fund. This project can only come together with significant participation from the ag industry. And over the next month, we should continue to work with ag industry leaders to find a means to fully fund this necessary project. If such a means cannot be found, this appropriation would not be necessary this year. So this chart now shows the ongoing and one-time general fund expenditures, the FY 2017 adopted total budget. Last March was $1.598 billion as a result of the softened FY 2017 revenues. The FY 2017 revised ongoing expenditures have been reduced to $1.569 billion. Because of one-time impacts that I talked about earlier, we were able to bridge the gap in key expenditure areas in FY 17 and need no other budget cuts in spite of weaker tax revenues. So the total adopted budget becomes $1.598 billion. The amended proposal for FY 17 is $1.583 billion, and the recommended budget in the general fund for FY 18 is $1.617 billion. In total, I'm proposing a revised budget in FY 17 of $4.7 billion and recommending $4.6 billion in total spending in 2018. In addition, my proposal reduces full-time equivalent employees by 38.4 FTE from the FY 2017 adopted budget, a total now of 13,862 FTEs. Both years are honestly balanced, with ongoing expenses for FY 18 fully supported by only ongoing revenue. South Dakota is working better than many other states. We can proudly say that we've balanced our budget honestly every single year without gimmickry or overly borrowing. Next year will be our 128th year. We've prudently maintained a 10% reserve of rainy day funds, using excesses to address emergencies and to prepay liabilities. We've made structurally balanced budgets the norm. We've used one-time dollars prudently for one-time uses only and not to fund ongoing obligations. We have one of the strongest pensions in the nation. We've memorialized financial practice improvements now in statute to help guide our state for the long term after you and I are gone. These practices are all paying dividends, and this past summer we received our final upgrade from Fitch Ratings, earning South Dakota the top credit rating from all three major rating agencies. All of these accomplishments are due to the conservative principles that we've upheld together. As I close today, I'd like to take a moment to remember one person who deserves some of the credit for our strong financial position, our friend Dan Dryden. As you know, we lost Dan in August, much too soon. I can't help but think of him as I give this speech. He was a longtime appropriator and a true numbers guy. I first came to know Dan during the 2011 legislative session when the recession had left our state budget in structural deficit. We had to make significant, unpopular cuts, and as an appropriator, Dan was right in the middle of that. Dan had worked for years as the Rapid City School business manager, and he was up to the challenge. Like his fellow appropriators and his fellow legislators, he faced those difficult choices with determination and courage. In South Dakota, we can be very proud that our state is one of the most fiscally sound in the nation. Dan Dryden deserves some of the credit for that. He was a stalwart supporter of balanced budget, conservative revenue estimates, and early debt repayment. Dan shares that legacy with many other legislators and with many governors who have served our state throughout our history. This year, I look forward to working with all of you to continue this important work. Together, we're building an even stronger South Dakota. Thank you all for being here today.
Enjoy the rest of your day, and for those of us who are traveling today or tomorrow, whenever, please buckle up. There's somebody out there who loves you.
And that wraps up Governor Dennis Dugard as he delivers his budget recommendations for fiscal year 2018. Also talking about a $26.1 million shortfall for 2017 and how he proposes we fix that, all related to about three different things. Sales tax projections by the legislature were down. It happens. He talked about how following this can be volatile. He also mentioned the ag sector. We were not seeing as many high equipment purchases by those in the ag industry. That helped lead sales tax and commodity prices to go down. And online internet sales. While there has been legislation passed recently to collect sales tax for those online purchases, there are companies that are not doing so. And according to the BFM, we miss out on about $35 million annually on some of that sales tax purchases that come through the online sales. Again, Governor Dennis Dugard delivering his budget that really looked at two different things, the shortfall for fiscal year 2017 and his recommendations going into fiscal year 2018. In the end, what we will be looking at in terms of fiscal year's adopted 2017 budget was right around $4.5 billion. Once they looked at those numbers and they revised the 2017 budget, we're at $4.6 billion. Now, when we look at fiscal year 2018, his recommendations will put us at $4.61 billion. Some one-time funds there, about $22 million. He had some things outlined, everything from money going into Spearfish Canyon to some facilities and lab and disease testing at SDSU. So some highlighted things that the governor mentioned. Again, if you want more information on what the governor laid out, you can find the slides themselves, including his speech, on our website at sd.net. There you'll find everything legislature for the upcoming legislative session and for today's speech. We're going to be visiting with state lawmakers right now to get their, I guess, their feedback on what they heard from the governor. And I understand we have Senator Billy Sutton standing by.
Senator Billy Sutton is a Democrat from the Burke area, and he is actually the Senate Minority Leader. Give me just your first response to what the governor said. Is this what you expected? Is 1% enough for things like schools and health care providers?
It is what I expected, to the degree that, you know, I knew that it would be a very conservative approach. I think there was some concern that there would be proposed cuts, so it was, you know, a relief to hear that that wasn't the case. Is 1% enough? No, I don't think it is. I think we need to get creative in how we do more for education, healthcare, and we do more for economic development. I didn't see anything in there as it related to the Build South Dakota Fund, which is an economic development program that we passed a few years ago. It's running out of money, and it's been very successful in South Dakota, and so we need to figure out a way to fund that, and I didn't see anything about that, so that was disappointing.
But in regards to things like Build South Dakota, if everything is running out of money, if the revenues are coming in at less, how do you just keep putting money into it? Or, I mean, are you taking it from someplace else? How would you propose handling that?
There are several ways to do it. You know, the one example would be the Governor's Future Fund. That brings in $18 million a year. The legislature has zero control over how that money's spent. It's essentially a fund that the governor can use for whatever he wants. And not saying that the governor hasn't used that for good things in the past, but it's something that the legislature doesn't have oversight over, and that's $18 million every year that could be used for something like this. The other thing we could do is look to cut other areas of government that are maybe wasteful spending that's out there. And, you know, there was a lot of talk last session about $50 to $70 million in wasteful spending that should have been available for education. And so I'll push some of our friends on the other side of the aisle to find some of those dollars to put towards education and healthcare that they were talking about.
Is there a different strategy that you have to take being in the Democratic minority as you look at this, as you look at the governor's proposal and know that the Republicans have a majority and can make some decisions without paying much attention?
I think what we have to do here as a super minority is just to fight for what we're passionate about every day and what we think that every South Dakotan's passionate about. And I think you could confidently say that every South Dakotan in South Dakota cares about education and cares about you know, affordable health care and being able to make it. I think there's a lot of people in our state that feel like they're not getting ahead, that feel like they're struggling to make it work. And it's our job to create a system and tax policy and economic development that helps them get ahead.
And that'll be the task in the 2017 legislative session. Democrat Billy Sutton, who is a state senator from Burke. Stephanie.
And I'm standing by with the Senator Tiedemann from the Brookings area. You and I were just chatting. This will be your 12th year that you'll be sitting on appropriations. The budget address, first of all, your thoughts on what you heard.
Well, I think it's a reflection of the times in the country, and especially in South Dakota. We're extremely dependent upon the ag economy. And what we're hearing, low prices, that has an impact on our state revenues coming in. I think people need to look at, we're not as bad as some other states that maybe have other industries that they're dependent upon. I think we're in a good position, but we just have to be very cautious with our spending.
I want to just touch on that a little bit. People, a lot of folks may go back to 2011 when we were dealing with the shortfall and the cuts. What do you want to say to folks that might be concerned that cuts may be needed?
I think the goal of both the governor and the legislature is to try to keep people whole, continue with the services that we have. I think that we're not in as deep a hole as we were back in 2011. We had spent some one-time money, and we were leaving some of the ERA funds, and we had to replace that with general funds. And so that was a huge hole to fill.
One of the things the governor talked about was e-commerce and some of our these online companies that are not getting those sales tax back to South Dakota. How big of a challenge could it be or will it be to go after some of these companies?
Well, South Dakota is in place. We've got everything in place to participate in the streamlined sales tax. So that's the good news. We're waiting on Congress to enact that law that would allow it to happen. There are some that do it voluntarily. There's companies that voluntarily collect. As the governor indicated, it's a huge hit for us. It's about $30 million at the state level and another $20 million at the local level. And it's really a fairness issue. Last year was the first year that internet sales across the country exceeded the sales at stores, businesses. And if that trend continues, and as the governor indicated, there's a 12% growth in internet sales. It's easy to do, but that is not bringing to us the revenue that we need to keep this state going.
Last, before I let you go, anything that the governor mentioned or brought up today that you're looking forward to?
Well, I think the one is the remodel and the build-out of the diagnostic laboratory in Brookings. Again, it's a state laboratory. It's very critical for the livestock industry. You could have a disease that comes in and wipes that out. It's also an impact on our wildlife. The wildlife are sent there to be analyzed for chronic wasting disease. So it has a huge impact to tourism, to our ag economy, and the state as a whole.
All right, very good. Senator Larry Tiedemann, District 7, thank you so much for coming up and visiting with me. All right, and we'll continue to visit with some of our state lawmakers. Keeley, we'll throw it down to you.
And I'm here on the floor with State Senator Brock Greenfield. He's one of the Republican leaders in the Senate. Give me your initial reaction to what you heard from the governor today.
Sure. As I'm sure everybody has mentioned, it's looking as though it's going to be a lean year coming up. Of course, we're hopeful that some of the returns will come in with, you know, revenues in excess of what they're currently projecting. But it does look like there's been a bit of a slowdown, a little bit of consumer uncertainty and whatnot. So accordingly, we have to tighten our belts a little bit here in South Dakota. And, you know, I think it's been a theme of most of the governor's budget addresses. This is a plan. This is not the plan. So any element contained therein is subject to debate. All options will be on the table, whether we embrace this entirely or whether the legislature tries to put its fingerprint on some of those items. And I would anticipate a pretty good give and take going forward.
And sometimes it's pretty straightforward. Other times there are some innovative things. Talk to me about this concept of taking stocks that the governor recommended that are unclaimed property and making them cash first so the state can use them. Is that something you'd entertain?
Well, it's something that I would definitely entertain. The question is, how in function does that work? Is the state still on the hook for that? Is that a liability going forward, or does that absolve us of the liability? With respect to most unclaimed property, you know, those are carried forward on the books as liabilities that the state is responsible for should somebody make a claim. By converting it to cash and then ponying up the check to the state, I don't know if that would essentially absolve us of all of our responsibility to the holder of such stocks or the heirs of the holder of such stocks. So I guess those are questions that need to be answered. But we have done creative things with the Unclaimed Property Fund in the past, and it has been to the benefit of the taxpayers in the state of South Dakota. Oftentimes a one-time deal, as this would be. But it's something we definitely need to talk about. It could very well provide us with an extra $13 million that we otherwise wouldn't have access to in the short run.
I have one last quick question for you, although I know that it is a long discussion. The governor took quite a bit of time out of his budget address to talk about Initiated Measure 22, and I know you're part of a lawsuit regarding Initiated Measure 22. Was this the right place for it, and help me understand your position?
Well, you know, I appreciate the governor taking the leadership role on this and stating what he perceived as problems, constitutional and otherwise, with the drafting and what have you. As a person who is involved in the lawsuit, I'm generally deferring to some of the leaders in that matter. Excuse me, but I signed on to the lawsuit because I viewed it as a problematic and potentially flawed measure that was passed that might have constitutional problems going forward. So I think that it's best that the courts take a look at it. I think that it's something that the legislature could choose to address going forward. I think that there will be any number of ideas as we come into the next session as to how to deal with that. But I think the main thing is seeing what the courts say here in the short run, and I think that would determine a lot about how the legislature would proceed during session.
Not the last we will hear about initiated Measure 22. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Senator Brock Greenfield is one of the leaders in the Republicans in the state Senate.
All right. Thank you, Keeley. I'm now joined by Representative Jean Hanha from Yankton. You, too, will sit on appropriations this year. Not a new position for you. A lot of people, they're learning of this shortfall, at least across South Dakota. They're hearing about it for the first time in the last few weeks. But as an appropriator, this is something that you've been kept well aware of, correct?
Yes. During the off season, when we're not in session, appropriation continues on. And each month we could see what the revenue and what the expenditures were. So starting in July, as we were moving forward, could see the continual decline in the revenue. So had certainly an idea that those dollars and a projection of what that might be. And so then started thinking, what are some of the implications that will come with this?
One of the issues the governor talked about was about a $22 million one-time funds, $22 million in one-time funds, which can be exciting, can be a little challenging when that struggle as to where that money goes. Your thoughts on the one-time funds and the fight that may go along or may not go along with that?
Well, I think you hit on it when you said the one-time funds, because that's what it is. And it's usually for a special project, either to close something out or something to begin, but there's going to be other funding there. I think I always go in what I've got to know it all about it. What's about the dollars? How are they going to be used? What do we see if anything's going to continue? And then I have to weigh the pros and cons. Are there some unintended consequences that can evolve because we're doing this one-time funding? Now, certainly the governor has laid out his plan for how those dollars could be used. And in a common sense, you know, it seems to flow that those are the appropriate resources. But I think there's going to be some other requests that are out there. And so I think, again, this is a budget, it's a place to start, and then we'll have the discussion. And I think when we're looking also, we've got a lot of new members that are coming to the legislature. Everyone has their own thoughts, impressions, what their feedback is from the community. So, you know, again, it's a place to start. He's got some good ideas how to use those dollars, the best resources for what we need in the programs that he's identified. But again, there could be some other things, and I think, as always, keep an open mind.
Good. Representative Jean Hanha, District 18, thank you so much for coming up here.
Thank you very much.
All right. And we'll throw it back down to Keeley.
All right. And we are on the floor here with State Representative Peggy Gibson. She is a Democrat. And we are just talking a little bit about the fact that Governor Dennis Dugard had that little kind of diversion from the numbers to talk about initiated Measure 22, and I understand that you have some opinions about that. It was a pretty negative light that Governor Dennis Dugard put that in. Do you agree?
No, I don't. I really feel that there are some very positive measures in initiated Measure 22. For example, the Ethics Commission and allowing the voters to choose political candidates, limiting the lobbyists' contributions. We have an ethics problem in the state of South Dakota, and I've proposed an ethics commission in several of my bills throughout my eight-year career in the House of Representatives, and I feel we need an ethics commission. With all of the scandals that we've had in the state of South Dakota, Gear Up and EB5, I think the voters definitely are telling South Dakota state government that they want some ethics in our state. And this has an ethics commission built into it, and I think we can work with it. And I think the people have spoken that they are irritated about the ethics situation in the state of South Dakota. So I think it has some positive parts to it, and I don't think it should be all viewed negatively and unconstitutional, because the people passed it, and I think we should listen to the will of the people.
But this is the budget address, and Governor Dennis Dugard said, you know, we're already looking at 1% increases for education, already just 1% for healthcare providers. So if we're going to take a big chunk of money out to fund the measure from voters, he says all of those other people get less. Is that right? Is that okay?
No, we have some rainy day funds, and I think we can use that money as the people have requested the state to do it. And I don't think that's very much of a chunk of the budget at all. And I think it's going to be appropriated back for good government.
So it sounds like we're back to this concept of it's not the plan, it's a plan, according to lawmakers.
That's correct. And I think we should respect the will of the people and go ahead with initiated Measure 22 and respect that right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
State Representative Peggy Gibson, she's a Democrat. Stephanie.
And I'm now joined by Representative Mark Mickelson from Sioux Falls. Representative, when you take over, you'll be taking over as Speaker of the House. First, tell me your thoughts on that.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. It's an honor and a privilege, and I look forward to working with the 69 other members of the House of Representatives.
A lot of new faces as well.
Yeah, 35%, 40%. Yeah, you've got to grow up pretty quick when you come out to the House, because pretty soon you're one of the old guys.
The governor mentioned initiated Measure 22, and he really was very harsh on his thoughts on how it was written and where we go from here as the legislature convenes in January. It may or may not be a debate on the House floor. Your thoughts?
Well, we'll certainly be addressing it. I did not vote for it. I didn't support it. There are a couple concepts in the bill that I think were worthy, but it came packaged with so many other what I'll call bad ideas that were poorly drafted that I decided not to support it. As the governor highlighted, it's 140,000 words. It's 70 sections. And at one point, there's a section in the bill that says, if we messed anything up, we'll create this independent commission, and they go in and change state statute. And that, to me, is pretty indicative of the kind of work that was done in terms of the drafting and the legal work. It wasn't done by anyone associated with state lawmaking. It wasn't done by anyone in the state in terms of even an attorney. They received some legal advice or some advice from the nonpartisan Legislative Research Council, and the Legislative Research Council said, hey, listen, this thing probably has some constitutional issues, and the promoters didn't care. The money came from out of state. And they put a message on that passed 52%. So I think what people voted for in that message is something that we as legislators are probably going to need to fix. And in terms of what happens with the rest of that process, there's probably not a lot of other good ideas in the measure. We'll have to convince members of the legislature to support that point of view, and we're just beginning that conversation. And as you know, that's an ongoing process.
Is that harder to do when it was something that passed by the voters of our state versus a law that maybe was put into effect by the legislature?
It will be, particularly for the new legislators who are uncomfortable assessing how their constituents will react to that. And I can't put my head in inside the mind of the voter. But that's why I think we need to say, here, listen, here's what you supported. We're going to fix it. We're going to hand it back to the people in a form that we think they probably intended it to be in. And then some of the other things that weren't marketed, that they didn't realize were in the bill, probably try to get rid of those.
Very good. Representative Mickelson, thanks for coming up and talking to me.
It's nice to see you, Stephanie.
You as well. Thank you very much. Safe travels home.
Thank you.
All right. And that does conclude SDPB's coverage of the budget address for fiscal year 2018. If you missed anything of what you've seen today, join us tonight at 10:30 p.m. Central on SDPB. We'll re-air our budget address, and as always, all of our stuff is archived at sdpb.org/statehouse. And this year, we're going to encourage you to check out SDNet for all your online streaming resources, whether it's high school activities or the South Dakota Legislature. On behalf of everyone with SDPB, I'm Stephanie Rissler and Keely Boltina. We thank you for joining us.